When the FX series Atlanta arrived 6 years ago, it was unlike anything else on TV. It depicted its namesake city as a surreal landscape rich with offbeat characters. And it turned its creator and star, Donald Glover, from a niche comedic actor and rapper into an A-list Hollywood auteur. Atlanta recently concluded its fourth and final season, and it remained dark and weird until the very end. But did it go out on top? I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Atlanta and its legacy on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us today is Ronald Young Jr. He's the host of the film and television review podcast, Leaving the Theater. Welcome back, Ronald.
Hi, Aisha.
Also with us is culture writer and critic Shamira Ibrahim. Welcome back to you too, Shamira.
Thanks for having me back, Aisha.
And making her pop culture happy hour debut, woohoo, is NPR Washington desk reporter Alana Wise. Hey, Alana, welcome.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. I'm so excited.
Yes. I feel like this is going to be a fun, perhaps spicy conversation, but I'm looking forward to it. So Atlanta follows Earn, a Princeton dropout who at first struggles to make ends meet. He's played by Donald Glover. Earn eventually becomes manager to his cousin and up-and-coming rapper Al, aka Paperboy, who's played by Brian Tyree Henry. Now, the show mostly follows their misadventures as Paperboy's star rises, and their circle also includes Darius, Paperboy's spacey friend played by Lakeith Stanfield, and Van, Earn's on-again, off-again girlfriend and mother of his young daughter played by Zazie Bates. After a four-year hiatus, the series returned this year for its final two seasons. Season three was a notable departure from its Atlanta home base. In some episodes, the four leads got into some shenanigans while in Europe for Paperboy's tour. And in other episodes, they were sort of Twilight Zone-y morality tales involving one-off characters and none of the main cast. Season four returned the gang to Atlanta and the show's roots as they continued to navigate existential crises. Atlanta was created by Donald Glover, and the majority of the episodes were directed by his frequent collaborator, Hiro Murai. And since the finale is now available on Hulu, everything's fair game, so come back to us later if you're not caught up and you care at all about spoilers. So Ronald, let's start with you. What is your relationship to Atlanta, and you know, how have you been rocking with this show for the last, 6 years? I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah, it's been the better part of a decade, which is weird to say about a show that only gave us four seasons. You know, in the beginning, I think we were in a different place in society with this show. You know, I remember we were still not necessarily streaming it as much. We were watching it on television. I remember talking about it with friends. I remember quoting lines, "The price is on the can, though," like things like that. Like, I remember quoting lines with people and actually relating to it with folks in a different way. And I remember we all waited with anticipation for the second season. Felt good, felt like it was a great sequel to the first one. And then a lot of stuff happened between the second and third season that kind of changed our viewing habits and who we were as people. And I think all of that put in a jar and shaken up, it soured me a little bit on season three. Like the Twilight Zone-y episodes and all that weren't necessarily something that I felt like were for Ronald, even though I would watch a show like that. I would watch a complete show where it's all Twilight Zone, one-off, Hiro Murai and Donald Glover making up stuff. I would watch that. Mm. But it felt like I really wanted Atlanta. I wanted the first two seasons. I wanted existential crises. I wanted characters in Atlanta doing stuff. And in season four, they got back to that. So I felt like it landed well, but unfortunately, I don't know if people were watching anymore because I think a lot of people fell off the train somewhere between seasons two and four. So I'm curious what everyone else thinks, but I'm also curious to see if people were still actually watching because I don't feel like they were anymore.
Yeah. I mean, 4 years is like things, so many things happen in 4 years. And then when you add the pandemic and how that actually felt like an extra like 6 to 8 years, it's like,
yeah.
I totally understand that feeling that things shifted and some of those things were out of their control and out of everyone's control. Alana, how about you? What is your relationship to the show?
So it's funny and it's really interesting. I think Ronald hits on a lot of good points. I was actually just talking to one of my friends last night because I was like, oh, I have to watch the latest episode. Are you caught up? And he was like, yeah, man, I stopped watching after the Tupac death episode. Like, it just got to be a lot. And I get it. Like, full disclosure, I'm from Atlanta. Like, when the show premiered, I was very excited because I was like, oh, the closest approximation to actual life in Atlanta that I had ever seen. Like, even some of the more surreal elements, like getting into a race with a celebrity in the parking lot of a strip club, is just like something that is extremely relatable. If you like grew up there, it's just a very bizarre type of scene. And I really loved the first season. Like, I was so gung-ho about it. Really enjoyed the second season. The third season, it got weird. 'Cause what's interesting is that it's still incredibly funny and fresh and interesting, but it's also really upsetting in a lot of ways, like the subjects they tackle. And I think even the way that they tackle them, like the treatment of Black people in America and abroad, the way Black culture is co-opted, revisiting sort of real situations like the Hart family murders, those poor adopted Black children who are killed by their white adoptive parents. Mm-hmm. Then you get something so absurd as having Chet Hanks in the third season doing his little bootleg off-brand Trini accent.
So, you grow up in Trinidad or Jamaica?
Oh, it's Trinidad and Tobago. And no, I'm from Tribeca.
It's so much. I feel like the argument is that, for one, well, it's satire, it's commentary, but I feel like sometimes it feels like the statement he's trying to make sort of revisits his sort of old persona in rap and some of the more problematic aspects of it that I had hoped with time he would maybe grow out of, but I don't know that he has.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned like the Chet Hanks, Chet Hayes, whatever he's calling himself these days, and the Liam Neesons. And I can't say Liam Neeson without saying Liam Neeson's key and peele. That was one thing that I noticed, especially in season three, where it seemed like Atlanta really went hard on getting these controversial figures to play versions of themselves and comment on whatever they were. So like the Liam Neeson thing, we had learned that Liam Neeson had made some racist remarks at one point many years ago. And so to throw him in here and to throw people like Kevin Samuels, who I had never even really heard of until this year. Mm-hmm. But
oh, to be lucky you.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, you've lived a great life, Aisha.
Basically, I don't know. He was like a bootleg Steve Harvey where he was giving women advice on how to date men.
It was like a modern Black version of the pickup artist.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like,
yes.
It was all negging women. Like, if you wear a size bigger than a size 8, or if you, it's all very strange and very misogynistic.
Yeah, there's just a lot of poking going on with the show, and sometimes the poking feels earned and other times it does not. But Shamira, let's get to you. I know you have lots of conflicted,
yeah,
perhaps feelings. Is that a fair way to categorize it?
I think that's a fair way to put it.
Okay.
I definitely enjoyed season one and two, especially season one. I definitely was one of those people who had followed Donald Glover throughout the arc of his career, where I was recommending Atlanta to people and basically giving the qualifier of like, trust me, like watch season one.
Yes.
I thought it was like really like artfully done. I'm not from the Atlanta area. I'm from New York, but I'd had a lot of friends who are either from Atlanta or had moved to Atlanta post-college. And so I'd spent just such a fair amount of time in the area. And like, it just felt so organic. And I thought it was such an intentional choice of location for Donald Glover, as someone, of course, who was from Stone Mountain, but also Atlanta as a choice of location, as some place that is viewed as by default like a Black Mecca, right? Like Black cultural life is so thriving there, right? And you can use it to just kind of showcase so many new nuances of Black working class, you know, Black elite, just Black quotidian existence. And you can have that slice of life, right, examination, mm-hmm. and use that to really play against the absurdities in a way that I really thought played with the concepts of surrealism in a way that was both amusing, refreshing, and actually insightful. As, you know, the show progressed, I think a lot of things started to happen, right? One is that a show like that became like a Black critical darling to what sometimes we jokingly call white famous, right?
Yes.
You know, and so it expanded kind of the lens under which Atlanta became appreciated, right? It was like now this kind of bubble under which like Atlanta was a great piece of our touristic exploration. And so that kind of expanded what became rewarded about it. And I remember distinctly about season two, one of the biggest things that was rewarded about it was the Teddy Perkins episode. And I think became like a really big inflection point, because when you go from season three and season four, now we get these like kind of isolated short films without really any big narrative arc tethering them to each other, right? Which is fine as like isolated episodes, but now we don't have any real connective tissue to both the actual milieu that like situates the show, right? And the actual investment in character development and the already existing shortcomings that people had already started to notice the show in and of itself. And I think that's where, you know, in addition to, of course, the delays in production and, you know, Donald Glover himself becoming like a legitimate bona fide superstar who had all these other projects kind of led to a little bit of disconnect and like the amount of investment and follow up in the latter seasons. And I think that caused some frustrations and friction, which I think he actually started to explore in the last season. You can see him kind of projecting some of his personal tensions with the criticism he's receiving in the latter episodes of the series.
I love what you said about when you were first trying to get people to watch the show, because I think it's impossible to not look at this show through the lens of Donald Glover and how he's changed and how he hasn't.
Yes.
I've had a very up and down relationship with him, and that I first came to know who he was thanks to Community. I loved that show pretty much from the beginning around 2009. And then I learned, oh, he's a rapper. So I checked out his album and I I bought the digital version of Camp. And I really liked it. I was in a different place in my life at that point. And I think I saw a lot of myself in the way that he saw himself. And Donald Glover has always seemed to have, in a way, this chip on his shoulder in terms of who he is as an artist, who he is as a Black artist. And I think that part of what made the first two seasons of Atlanta feel so, oh, I was not expecting this to come out of this person, was just how, first of all, it was kind of the first time that a lot of us had seen him interacting in a mostly Black environment on screen. And the other thing was that it just felt as though he kind of understood that these things are complicated and that Blackness is not this catch-all. I think the fact that it is a show that is, yes, it's set in Atlanta, but it's not in the Atlanta that I think people who are not from Atlanta think of. It is not just super quote-unquote urban or suburban. There's a lot of nature in this show, and the show really digs into like the tension that comes with being a Black person who lives in a semi-rural area. It seemed like such a 180 from who he was the backpack rapper era of like, I'm weird and Black people don't like me because of that.
Yeah.
There is also his fixation on Asian women. If you go back and listen to his rap music, his rap songs,
yikes,
it was very uncomfortable. And so like, when the show was at its best, I think for me, it was when he hadn't hit that apex yet. Like, obviously, Atlanta was kind of a success from the beginning. You know, it won him a couple of Emmys. But I do think that once he got into This Is America era, things kind of shifted. And that was right around the end of season two when that dropped. This is America. Don't get you slipping, no. And he became even more concerned about like, okay, some Black people love me now, but also I feel like this pawn, or I feel like the Negro who's going to be held up by white establishment. And I see him dealing with that and wrestling with that in season three and season four. I'm just curious from you all, like, what was your impression of Donald Glover before Atlanta? And having seen the whole show now, has your perception of him changed?
You know, I think for me, the thing that stands out is the change in Donald Glover. And I think there's a couple key points. One, if we think about him being a backpack rapper before this, because everything you just said about Donald Glover is exactly how I was introduced to him. It was Community first, then Because the Internet.
I love Because the Internet. It's still good.
It stands up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you go back to his comedy troupe with those guys and all that.
Derek Comedy.
Yes, yeah. Derek Comedy. Thank you. So he was doing Derek Comedy. And I think at one point, Donald Glover has been wrestling with his own place in the Black community for a long time. At some point when the Black community was like, hey, we love you, he was like, nah. and I feel like the nah is echoed out through seasons three and four because there's a lot of irritating things that Donald Glover has said in that interview he did with himself.
Oh, God.
And then Stephen Glover also does an interview that was pretty prominent that I read around season three. When I listened to the things they were saying and watched the show, I'm like, I feel like they're kind of getting to a point now where they're just saying, nah, there's not going to be any point to this show. We're just going to make whatever we want to make, and we're just going to do standalone episodes, and some of it's not going to make sense, and we're never going to explain it because we could do what we want now. And I felt that a lot in season three and in season four. So even when I sat down for the finale of season four, I was prepared for it to end exactly the way it did, unresolved and slightly dissatisfying, but very much of the show that he has created. And I think that is very much who Donald Glover is. And I feel like his whole thing now is to be like, yeah, now I'm never going to give you anything that you want. And you see that played out in the show. And I feel like that same instance is played out in his life, which I'm not mad at, because this is the ultimate time for us to separate art from the artist. I want to be clear. This is the only time that phrase has ever worked, because a lot of times people use it to describe other artists who have done reprehensible things. No reprehensible things have done here, but I will say personally with Donald Glover, I'm like, I like the stuff you make, but I don't know how I feel about you necessarily.
He's got a very na-na-na-na-na quality to him. Yes. Yes. You see him like sticking out his tongue. And like,
it's funny. My introduction to him was actually Childish Gambino in the album Camp. And then I was like, okay, who is this guy? And I started digging into him and watching Community. I know he had like written some stuff for 30 Rock. And I like really liked him. Granted, it did and still does sort of burn my biscuits a little bit. This whole like too white for the black kids, too black for the white. It's like,
yes,
cut it out, man. Like, but at this point, he's like taking on a new thing where it's like, in his view, and this is admittedly unfair, I don't live in this man's head. I can only see what I feel like I'm seeing. But I feel like in his mind, he has sort of matured and evolved beyond his audience and is now sort of spoon feeding sort of these ideas and these concepts that he thinks like people and seemingly specifically black people should have. But in my view, in a lot of ways, struggling to do that in a way that is A, coherent, to your point, Ronald, about just like these standalone episodes, like nothing's episodic anymore. Like, live in my world for a minute. This is how it goes down in Donald's brain. To a certain extent, it works. Like, the content he's put out is good. Like, it's very watchable content. I hate to draw comparisons because I feel like it's unfair to artists, but like, there were so many sort of Black Mirror, Twilight Zone elements within the show, even down to the episode, I think it was called Rich Wigga, Poor Wigga, the Kevin Samuels one, how it's like all in black and white, climaxes with this fantastical flamethrower fight.
You know what? What if I burn you first? Oh, wait, too late.
Was that a dark skin joke?
It's like he's circling the idea, but somehow at the last minute, he just veers off in a weird direction a lot of times. It's hard to reconcile how much I enjoy his art sometimes with how poorly he seems to be able to deliver a message.
Yeah.
I think that Donald Glover really has this seeming need to sit at tension, right, with the consumers of his art in a way that seems like increasingly defiant. I personally do think that he has grown. I don't know how much he's grown, but I've seen his journey from Derek Comedy to where he is now. But I also think that chip on his shoulder has like grown to be martyr-sized, and it's been like very expressive in the way that he's even articulated certain, you know, episodes. Like, I remember watching this season, the episode The Goof Who Sat by the Door, and I remember seeing like the actual description of the episode as I saw the screener come in, and I was like, is this going to be like a thinly veiled allusion as to how he's felt about his career the entire time? And then I watched the episode and I was like, oh, it actually is like a thinly veiled articulation of how he's felt about his career.
Yeah, it is.
Great, right? We could also just talk about how a Goofy movie is like a Black Disney movie.
Yes.
But there's like some value, and I have some empathy for that, right? I know that as people who work in creative spaces, it can be really hard to exist on social media and just see people giving you criticisms and not want to address all of them. Like 100 people saying, hey, I don't like this thing, is like actually not that deep.
Yeah.
But it really can feel like, oh, these people are just waiting to take me down, right? Mm-hmm. Listen, maybe every 6 months, that one clip of you singing Tamia goes viral for no reason, right? People are waiting to love you at every single junction, right? Speaking of his music career, before he pivoted into making R&B, right, with a Swedish man, but, you know, but he also had the mixtape Royalty.
Yes.
And I remember being surprised by it because I'm like, oh, he jam-packed that with artists that were like legitimate artists in like the rap, quote unquote, street scene, especially on the West Coast. He had Absol, he had Schoolboy Q, he had Nipsey Hussle, and like they legitimately collaborated with him. The way that he looks at how he's had to make these pivots and like what things are of and not of value to him, are sometimes about how he feels like he's had to prove and overcompensate these things. And that's more than fine and understandable, but I think it also is, you're a public figure and it's okay that people ask you questions, right?
Yeah.
You don't get to be a person who's indignant that people ask you questions.
Yeah. And
I think he has the right to be prideful about his work,
yeah,
but sometimes it just comes in this sense of, oh, Black people are waiting to take me down. It's like, no, actually we're waiting to celebrate you, but
yes,
you're the one who wants to make it an actual group of people at odds with you, you know, as
right,
opposed to being embraced.
Yeah. And I think that clearly just comes out in the show in so many ways, like just looking at season three and how it subverted expectations. And it made me think in a way of Jordan Peele and Nope, mm-hmm, but like in a more antagonistic way where,
yeah,
Jordan Peele was very clearly like, I know you, after two movies, you expect me to be like this. I'm going to veer completely in this opposite direction.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel as though he was doing it because he despised us or because he,
yes,
was,
right, right.
Or not even despised, but like resented us, but because he wanted to challenge us.
Right.
In season three, I think the biggest issue for me was that he actually kind of went from focusing on these characters to I'm going to focus on white people now.
Right.
It felt kind of like season two of The Wire, but like, I don't think I'm going to go back to this season and feel as though it actually made sense. I still feel that what I wanted was to go on this journey with these characters. And I think as much as I liked a lot of season four and how it returned to what we loved about the show for the most part, because of season three, all of the ending of season four felt mostly unearned, especially when it came to Van,
yes,
and his relationship with Van, who,
oh my God,
season three Van, the way that ended, where she has a literal psychotic break.
Who is season three Van? Like, she,
yeah,
literally did not exist.
Yeah. That's been a tension from the beginning because she was always the only main female character on the show. Mm-hmm. And she was the girlfriend. She was the mother. The show sometimes directly addresses how she feels about that, but then, mm-hmm, it doesn't actually take that criticism or that critique and turn it into, well, actually, we're going to make you into more of a full-fledged character. Like,
right,
what was the Tyler Perry episode about? All of a sudden, she wants to be an actress now?
Yeah.
Right.
Who is this for? And you certainly didn't feel that watching Nope with Jordan Peele. You just feel like,
no,
here's a guy who just wanted to make a movie. Hey, I didn't want to have an allegory under this one, guys. Hope you enjoy it. You
know what, right, I mean? And the other thing is, like, one word they love to use consistently is the word elevate,
yeah,
which like is like so irksome. Like whenever they get pushed or challenged or critique on something, they're like, we just feel like this conversation needs to be elevated. I'm like, elevated where? Like, where are we trying to go?
Where are we going?
It's very pretentious.
Well, that's very much in the finale. Like,
yes,
can we talk just very briefly about the finale? Because,
yes,
to set it up, basically Paperboy, Earn, and Van are all going to this restaurant. This restaurant of a friend of Van's or whatever, and it's a Black sushi chef. And across the street is a Popeyes, and they're all like, I want Popeyes. This food is not hitting it. And then the guy who started the restaurant goes on this long tangent about how when Black people do the same things other cultures do, it's considered low, whatever. And I was like, this is more of that direct commentary.
Every Japanese sushi restaurant worth its soy sauce does it that way. But if a brother from Alabama does it the same way, suddenly the fish is dirty.
Yeah, but y'all serve,
you know, in Japan.
Did that work for you?
No.
Okay.
I just didn't care about it. Like, I was like, this is a very long speech. Thank God Darius came and saved him in this stolen Maserati. Like,
and he punched him. Thank God.
Thank God there was some physical retribution here.
Right.
Also, he was like, sushi's supposed to be served room temperature. They didn't say room temperature. They said this fish was warm, and now you're trying to serve them blowfish.
Right.
I watched The Simpsons. I know what happens if you eat blowfish that's not cut properly.
Right.
It's bad news.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, in Japan, it's not like they constantly eat sushi all day, every day either. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, if we're really, if we're trying to be like all pretentious about it, like, it's not like that's that serious in the first place. Like,
yeah.
I feel like this is going out on a little bit of a tangent, but I also feel like the fact that Donald Glover and the characters made such a big deal about like this sushi restaurant, blah, 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 blah. We didn't see Earn like so excited when Darius like found a traditional jollof rice place in London.
Right.
But I feel like it's partly about Donald Glover's seemingly personal belief that certain cultures are above and certain cultures are beneath, particularly his elevation of like Asian women, Asian culture that sort of borders on fetishizing them.
Oh, no, it's not border. It used to be very fetishes. It was very...
That whole thing was a little bit weird to me, too. Yeah. Like, that's not to say that Black people should not venture out, try new things, blah, 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 blah. Absolutely.
No, obviously.
But it just, that whole spiel just felt strange.
Yeah. So my final question for you is a little bit more positive, maybe. But, like, do you have a favorite character?
Darius. Easily.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Okay. That's the correct answer. And I was actually very glad to see that it ended on a more or less kind of Darius episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was actually worried that they were going to be like, none of us are going to be in the finale. It's going to be just like season three again. Because yes. Donald Glover would do that. Right. But yes, Darius was the best. And Teddy Perkins will go down, I think, as one of the greatest episodes of all time.
Still terrifying.
Still terrifying. Still terrifying. Well, we want to know what you think about Atlanta. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Ronald Young Jr., Alana Wise, Shamira Ibrahim, thanks to you all for being here. I know we all felt complicated about it, but it was fun.
This was fun. Thank you.
Yeah.
Definitely a journey.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Romel Wood and Candace Lim and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. I'm Ayesha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we'll be talking about Yellowstone.